Yes, folks, we're here in the studio on a beautiful sunny day to begin another edition of Valley Edition. And I have in the studio all three panelists. I'm going to start right in the middle with Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hi, Mike. Good to be here in person.
It's good to have you. And over on the right, so to speak, we have none other than Charles Hayes. Welcome, Charles.
Thanks, Mike.
And over on the left, we have Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning.
Today, I thought we could do something first as an extension of the topics we have been talking about before we launch into looking at specifics. Prior to starting today, I had a conversation with Charles Hayes, and he reflected upon his use of a method of getting the words out, and that is Facebook. I bring this up because one of the things we keep talking about is the different ways in which news and information is shared, and we've had discussions about print. We've talked about a whole variety of things. Once upon a time, there used to be blogs, and I'm not sure that I have checked a blog in a long time. But Facebook, another thing. Charles, what has caused you to be so prolific on Facebook?
Well, political anxiety, big time. I belong to like 33 political groups now. It's mostly preaching to the choir, but the choir's getting bigger. So.
And so I understand that these aren't little limited number of characters contributions you're making, but rather, in some cases, lengthy.
Some of my posts daily are 800 or 900 words, but people are reading them.
Okay.
So it's working. Seems to be anyway.
And one of the things that we have been long discussing is how to report news. So, for example, the borough, Matsu Borough, may have a disaster in the valley. It might be flooding, and Facebook has become a way for the sharing of specific information about what's happening. As a reporter, Zaz, I'm guessing you may, in those kinds of times, look at Facebook postings. And how do you use Facebook?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, and even in situations like a disaster, like flooding, because the information on Facebook is not really being vetted. It can be a source of really far-fetched rumors and potentially dangerous rumors. But yeah, absolutely. It's also a great crowdsourcing tool. I've used Facebook as a reporter when I did a story about the super bright headlights that we're seeing here. I posted on a Glen Highway traffic group that has at least 10,000 members and got lots of first-person anecdotes. I reached out to people directly through that.
Right.
It certainly helps journalists engage with the public in a way that we don't necessarily on our own websites.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It provides accessibility to reporters for the public and, you know, breaks down what for many was long perceived as a wall. I think it's a good tool used properly.
Okay.
But then when it's not used properly, there are also news sites, and there's one here in the Valley, they call themselves a news site. And there is, I don't know the percentage, but there's some information, maybe quite a bit of information on that site that isn't news and isn't factual. And that can be frustrating as a journalist.
Now, my understanding in just that topic of filtering, if you will, vetting information that's on Facebook itself as an entity has, it appears, put some effort into saying, how do we validate or put in different categories to have a site that is going to be looked at as reliable in terms of information. Charles, you've been out there a lot. Have you found any examples of that?
You mean in where they're policing themselves, you mean? Or?
Right, or that there is a Facebook group that is, if you will, reliable in the sense that the information there is being reported as objective, that separates opinion from reports of what's happening, that kind of thing. Or is that still something to come in the future?
I see a lot less fake news now than I did. But I don't know the particular cause. I don't know how why that's the case. I'm hoping that they're, you know, filtering it out a little bit.
Well, Facebook is making a point and sort of a mission right now to show us at least that they're trying to filter it out.
Right.
Well, and I would submit, too, that perhaps there is not quite the same urgency to push fake news out.
Yeah.
There's, you know, less of an agenda, so to speak.
Right.
Okay, well, let me take a specific example of a recent event. It appears to be an event that started out by being very, very factual. What I'll refer to is in the Alaska Senate, a bill that was being worked up that inserted a very clear statement, dollar figures of $5 million in a particular place on a certain page in the document, not approved by the Alaska legislature as a given, but as something that was there, that caused an enormous, I think, outcry, not only on Facebook, but certainly spoken to at a recent Palmer Council meeting and other places. What I'm referring to is a budget markup piece that suggested a reduction in a certain department within which the Pioneer Homes are located. Zaz, have you followed that at all?
And it was basically a line item. I mean, this is the Pioneer Home funding in the state Senate proposal, and basically what happened, although there's been some damage control, is that the Senate version of this budget proposal had a $5.7 million cut next to the words Pioneer Home and another $800,000. And so this was a little more than $6.5 million total. And so the Senate version says, we want to take this out of the Pioneer Home budget. And Governor Walker says, his division of Pioneer Home says, if you're going to do that, then we have to close the Palmer Pioneer Home and maybe Juneau. And there's a lot of political football, I mean, on both sides, really, but this at the heart of this is the Senate saying, well, no, this isn't unallocated. Or this is really, sorry, the governor and the Senate have been at war for some time now over these unallocated cuts that the Senate would make. And we want you to take $6.5 million out of the Department of Health and Social Services. Wasn't going to fly this time. Walker had said, look, you need to tell me if you want to make these cuts, make them, you know, put them on paper somewhere. And so this was that. But then the Senate said there's two places in this bill that give you latitude to do what you want, take it out of wherever you want. And so it led to a huge amount of fear and panic in the public. And again, I think there was some politicking going on both sides. Yesterday, Senator, I always pronounce it, McKitchie?
Sure.
Pete McKitchie said that it was an aide put it there. And we somehow missed it all along, and it's getting silly. But meanwhile, it sounds as if, I mean, all along, really, as a reporter, it's frustrating because anyone looking at it, they're not going to close the Palmer Pioneer Home, but people in the Pioneer Home and their relatives and staffers are being told to prepare for the closure of the Pioneer Home. So,
Charles,
well, the reason it hit such a nerve, I think, is because it's in sync with the national trajectory.
Okay.
It looks like the way everything else is going.
Okay, and people who have been following discussions, certainly healthcare and et cetera, I would tend to agree. I think if your focus has been to be sensitized, then this pops up. Whether it's a sloppy piece of work there, as the budget proposals from the two houses and at the legislature being brought to completion. The interesting thing to me was I looked at both a letter, something hard copy I could look at, from the governor, who referenced his own father having been in the Palmer Pioneer Home. His intentions certainly were to keep it up, to maybe diffuse the idea that from his side this was going to be a political game. And then also coming from the Senate, a statement that backing down a little bit, but not completely, saying this was an error. And everything is going to take a little bit of a break because we have a holiday coming up, and then they'll be back to talk about it. I guess my point about this is this was a line item with implications. There are only two times, I think, when you get all the spin that happens, or a higher level of spin, and that is campaigning for a political office and essentially another campaign to gain support for your budget in particular. And that's where we are right now. And as I remember, we're pretty much to the 90 days. Now what we have is the preliminaries are done, the appetizers have been laid out, and now we're going for the entrees, which will come in the 30 days, which is really the heart of the session, I'm beginning to think. And that will play out. And the question will be, looking forward, given the role that Facebook plays today, the rapidity with which you take something small and you get it out there and you have people responding and so on, how that has changed is, you know, we look back at last year and say, last year, this year, are they really any different? Well, maybe they are. As more and more people, Charles was probably not using Facebook last year to the same degree as you are this year.
No.
Yeah. So if you're a representative sample, and perhaps there are many others, then that changes the way in which this public arising happens, I think.
Well, and the ability to push news out quickly that way, you can see it in a lot of the legislative Facebooks. They can put the news out and spin it how they want to, and that's where you see, in my opinion, a major overlap of politics and policy. That it seems clear to me, for example, that they're already setting the table for the 2018 campaign by setting up the governor to take the fall for every cut, for every bad thing. You know, it's just blame the governor. That seems to be the theme now, and it will not surprise me at all if it carries over into the campaign.
Now, there's been a certain legislator who's been mentioned as having an interest in being governor, a gentleman who formerly was part of the Senate majority and has now seemingly stepped aside to be alone. And, of course, I'm talking about Senator Dunleavy. Any comments about his seemingly different approach? He has doubled down on saying you're not cutting enough, and even though it looks like you're cutting, that's not enough, and I can't vote for this. And as a result, he was asked to leave various positions he's held as chair. Mark?
Scripted nonsense. It's flat-out posturing, in my opinion. It's all well and good for people like Dunleavy to say cut, cut, cut. He's still not offering any kind of detail. He's saying let the governor figure out the details, and that is just not fair, and it's not honest either.
Mm-hmm. Well, we seem to be coming somewhat full circle to talk about the likelihood of a lot of posturing as we move into the final 30 days. We do know that there have been positions taken to reduce the budget, in particular of the university and the K-12 system, in a way that has left people who are responsible for coming up with a budget, the Board of Regents, the school boards around the state, saying, whoa, this is, if you go ahead and do these things, these are we've been working to accommodate, but this is really going to be very difficult. I think the president of the University of Alaska system, President Johnson, he said basically, you're dismantling the system. Any comment about that, Charles?
Not really. To me, the stress level just keeps going up and up and up, when will the cuts come? I think it may take some kind of a catastrophe in this country before we wake up, before we really get our act together and start acting like liberals and conservatives with something to offer each instead of one group in my way of the highway.
Okay. Okay. Well, one of the lesser focused upon suggestions for dealing with the budget has to do with oil tax credits. I know we've had we've had discussion of the PFD, reducing it, and both branches of the government have offered, they seemingly are saying, yes, we're going to reduce that. That'll be part of it. And the other part of it is the question of whether we have any income that we're going to be looking at to help with this budget deficit. And then the tax situation, which is probably the most inscrutable of them all. Charles, you've had some experience with the oil tax credit thing. What's your sense of this?
This state has given way too much away to the oil companies, way too much. I mean, Prudhoe Bay was a great, I mean, it was like they used to say in the South, cutting a fat hog. There was plenty there. I mean, the Kaparik field in particular, we really missed the boat on that. The state got their lunch taken with that field. I used to know the particulars of it, the exact way it happened, but I don't recall it anymore. But I don't know. We're so far out of sync with what we should be in that regard that it's easy for the oil companies to say with justification that you're still messing with it and you shouldn't, because we should have put this thing to bed in a way that was more equitable to the state a long time ago, and we wouldn't be in this mess.
I'd be talking about it. Okay. Okay, that's an interesting one. So we are left with the last piece of this, and here I'm asking for your sense of the three choices: one, neither, or two, income tax, or three, sales tax. So, Mark, what's your thought? Which of those three?
Which do I think will happen, or?
Yes. Not what you would want or be willing to do, but which do you think is going to make it through the gauntlet?
Well, I think it's going to be a tough sell for an income tax this time around. I think unless we get a spike in oil prices, it's inevitable. A sales tax seems easiest to swallow for most people. I don't know. It's hard to say.
You've got choice three. Nothing behind the door.
Boy, that would be scary. I think there are people out there who would be happy to do nothing and get us, you know, closer to the edge and again, turn around and point the finger at the governor. It would not surprise me if there are people like that in Juneau, but I think good sense will ultimately prevail, and nothing will not be an option.
Okay.
My only prediction is that good sense is questionable in this climate, in Juneau and in D.C. But boy, you know, the Republicans in the Senate seem to favor a sales tax over anything, at least in the run up to the primary and the election season, the general season. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I honestly, I'm not in Juneau. We have a very capable reporter, Nat Herz, in Juneau. He might be a better person to ask this question. I guess I'll go with option C, since Mark kind of fudged on A and B, and I'll just pick C. So it's open, but I'm curious what Mr. Hayes has to say.
There we go, Charles.
I think there are too many black swans lurking in the shadows.
Ah.
To this, I mean, every day is a pins and needle. I mean, it's like in the White House, we have a bull in the China shop, and you have to listen for China breaking every day. So there's no telling what's going to happen.
and you're still thinking that those factors, and that's important, when you have big events happening, or the potential for them on a large scale, increased belligerency and perhaps some additional expression of war someplace, that does affect us in particular. And even down to the point of the increased nasty talk that's happening with North Korea, the reminder being that we are not far from North Korea, and we are one of those potential places that they may reach out and touch. But back to the question, three choices. Are they going to go with no additional taxes, income tax, or sales tax?
Well, if I had to guess, I'd say probably a sales tax.
Okay. Well, that seems to be it seems to be something that I'm hearing people say as a default. But the real question is whether it is so complicated to make that happen with the right numbers, et cetera, that it can get through the legislature. At the present time, just to remind listeners and remind myself, in the House, we seem to have a coalition where people are able to talk across the aisle. In the Senate, not so much. We mentioned Senator Dunleavy, and his departure from chairmanships means that's been a little bit of musical chairs. And the Valley's own Shelley Hughes has moved from chairing the Education Committee to a much presumably more powerful position. And that has brought Gary Stevens from Kodiak into the chair of the Education Committee. The change of personality, as we know, in the Alaska legislature in those positions can make more than just a nuanced difference in what actually gets done. So I'm just suggesting that perhaps, if I'm answering this question, that the change for education would be to lessen the likelihood of a reduction. I'm just going to suggest that.
I agree with that completely. In Gary Stevens, you definitely have a more statesman-type senator, somebody who's shown a great willingness to listen and to deliberate and to make good decisions. So yeah, I think that's a really good point, Mike.
Yeah.
If you're a legislator, which one of those options would you be less worried about having your fingerprints on?
Oh, good.
That weighs heavily in this too.
Yeah. I'm guessing if it were to put them in order, it would be sales tax followed by do nothing, followed by income tax. There's still a lot of energy around income tax, even though if one does the analysis and sits down and looks at it, remembering that the income tax proposal that has emerged is a more complicated one than the simple one that said, we'll do a straight percentage of your federal income tax. But it has levels of different amounts depending upon your income, which increases the complexity, which increases the difficulty.
It feels more oppressive.
Yeah.
Whether it is or not.
Especially with the dividends.
Yeah.
I think it probably is. I know Shelley Hughes is a fan of the sales tax.
Right. And not a fan of the income
Certainly.
Tax. Yes. Well, folks, once again, we managed to go through the time allotted, and we're finishing up here with another edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Charles Hayes for coming into the studio. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
I want to thank Zaz Hollander for also making it in on such a beautiful day.
Very exciting. Yeah, happy Easter, everybody.
Right. And I also want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming in as well today. Thank you, Mark.
Have a great week, everyone.
All right. And I underline that. Yes. Have a good weekend.